From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. With the passage of its Proposition 71 on November 2nd, California voters put a whopping $3 billion to work funding stem cell research as a workaround to President Bush's restrictions on federal money for the controversial scientific frontier. That vote has made California an instant giant in stem cell research ambitions. It sidestepped the White House, and it has left many other states with big biotech ambitions worrying for their futures. This hour on Point, California's stem cell gold rush and its implications for the nation. But first tonight, the Bush administration has issued a new set of rules for maintaining the country's national forests that mark the biggest shift in American forest use policy in decades. The new regulations are being welcomed by loggers and condemned by environmentalists. Juliet Alprin has covered the shift in forest policy for The Washington Post and joins me. Juliet, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So what's up with these new policies? What's the change?
It's quite a sweeping change. It's essentially changing regulations that have been in place at least since the Reagan era, since 82. And it's really applying a more corporate approach to forest management by trying to streamline the process through which forest managers do what amounts to zoning. They say you can log here, you can camp here, mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. And what they're trying to do is to make that process faster by not having to do as many of the environmental impact statements, scientific assessments that you would have to do otherwise.
Now, this applies to all 155 national forests, all almost 200 million acres across the country?
Exactly. And 20 grasslands as well.
Now, and under the previous rules, if a logging company, let's say, wanted to come in and do some cutting, what, they'd have to do a big study of the environmental impact that would take years to do?
Well, it's a little more complicated. There are, mm-hmm. Individual issues that have to be dealt with when you have a specific logging proposal. But broadly speaking, these are forest management plans. They're plans that last for 15 years, and they take years to complete, sometimes 5 years, sometimes as much as 9 years.
This is the old system before the change.
This is the old system. Mm-hmm. And basically, under this old system, you would say this is how much timber can be cut in any, from any year, given year. Mm-hmm. This is, where you can do different activities. And it sets the ground rules for later individual timber sales, for example, that will happen, or mining or what have you. Now what they're trying to do is they'll still keep these 15-year plans, but they're trying to do them much faster in 2 to 3 years. And so, for example, they don't have to do a sweeping environmental impact statement, which they did have to do in the past.
You and others point out that the environmental impact statement gave conservationists a lot of leverage because it could be disputed, contested, it could take a long time, and it put very specific restrictions in place.
Exactly, and it also kind of mapped out exactly what was going to happen, and now the forest managers, the officials, will not have to go through that same process. They argue, just to give the mm-hmm. Bush administration side, that this actually will be better because they're going to do an independent audit each year to see how the plans are working, and theoretically people could pipe in and complain and say, look, we have a problem with the plan, mm-hmm. and we want to amend it. And it's just unclear how practical that is.
Now, giving this power to the forest manager pushes the power down to the local decision makers around the national forests?
Exactly. It gives them much more flexibility than they've had in the past.
Does it increase the leverage of commercial interest in the forest? Do they have more sway at the local level or more leeway with these new rules?
Well, they could, and certainly people expect that it'll accelerate the rate of logging and so forth. I mean, one thing that's, again, significant is one thing to keep in mind, three presidents have tried to change these rules. Bush Sr. tried to change them. Then Clinton actually put changes in place that Bush rolled back after taking office. And, for example, when Clinton did it, he maintained that the ecological health of a forest was more important than its economic potential and viability. Mm-hmm. Now, under the Bush administration, these two things are equal. The forest managers must give them equal weight. And so that obviously is an advantage to commercial interests.
Equal weight to the economic activity within a national forest and the environmental health of that forest.
Exactly.
Which makes it a kind of toss-up every time which way it will go.
Right, although, again, obviously they say that forest managers are, have to balance a number of competing interests and will keep these things in mind and will try to make judicious decisions that can do both, that can foster mm-hmm. an ecosystem's health, while at the same time exploiting some of the natural resources that exist on public land.
Businesses with a hand in natural resources clearly welcoming this. What about conservationists? What are they saying?
They're complaining a great deal is what they're doing. They're saying that this is a terrible blow, a bigger blow than the roadless rule, which you might have heard of, which is an issue of,
right,
you know, how many roads can you build in national forests. They're saying that this is a, you know, huge Christmas Eve surprise that the administration is putting in at the last minute, and they say it will have a huge impact on what's important to keep in mind is a quarter of all the imperiled species in the United States, a quarter of the species that are at risk for extinction live on national forests.
So birds and mammals, reptiles, the works.
Exactly, the works. A lot of large animals who need large swaths of lands, grizzly bears, wolves, wolverines. Mm-hmm. So they're saying that these species are now at risk of going extinct if, you know, the scales tip in the favor of the commercial interest.
But for now, the rules are there, right? They're, it's done.
Yes, they absolutely are there. They take effect as soon as they're published in the Federal Register, which will probably be next week. And then the environmentalists plan to challenge them in court. But at the same time, they will stay in effect at least until, you know, a judge rules that they would be suspended. So they will be the law of the land next week.
Juliet Alperin, thanks for bringing us up to date.
Thank you.
Juliet Alperin is the correspondent for The Washington Post. She spoke with me from Washington. Three years ago, President Bush enacted a policy sharply restricting the use of federal money to support embryonic stem cell research. Last month, California voters passed Proposition 71, a 10-year, $3 billion publicly funded research initiative that zooms right past the Bush restrictions. Stem cell researchers call it a boon to basic research. It is also a giant magnet, already attracting researchers and biotechnology companies to California to get in on the money. Now, other states with high hopes for biotech are reviewing their battle plans, asking what California's huge move will mean for them. Tonight on Point, California's stem cell gold rush and the implications for the nation. You can join the conversation. Are you a stem cell researcher eyeing California's $3 billion sweetener? Does California's giant bet on embryonic stem cells help the rest of the country or leave it in the dust? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from San Francisco is Carl Hall, science writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. He's been reporting on the passage and implementation of California's stem cell initiative, Proposition 71. Carl Hall, thanks a lot for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
So you must have a tremendous amount of excitement in California in the research and venture capital communities over this huge pot of public money headed towards stem cell research.
Well, they're certainly ambitious. They're hoping to get the first grants out by May. They've already created a sort of a bureaucracy, at least the start of a bureaucracy, to begin putting together all these various processes, very complicated processes that more or less are going to amount to a mini NIH.
National Institutes for Health, which has been and is in everything but stem cell research, the leading organization for this kind of research.
That's right, and they're going to try in most cases to duplicate what the NIH does, the best practices there. They may try to be innovators in this as well, but at this point, all this money is kind of just sitting out there in some fantasy land, and it's certainly starting to attract some interest, not just in California, but probably, I would say, around the country and even worldwide.
But it's coming. It's going to be applied, $300 million a year for 10 years, which, if I've got it right, is about 10 times the amount of federal funding available and free of the Bush restrictions on stem cell research. I see Kevin Wilson here, Director of Public Policy for the American Society of Cell Biologists, saying everyone I talk to wants to move to California. Do Californians expect this money to be a big magnet for researchers across the country, Carl?
Well, you know, I moved out here even without the stem cell money to get me out here. But I've talked to several senior people, and, they're not planning on immediately throwing out everything in their lives to come out here. I think that what's probably going to happen is there will be some movement out here, and particularly some younger folks, postdocs who are looking for a career path and see this as an attractive option. They've tried to make this appear to be a stable, politically insulated program, so you don't have to worry about any sudden changes in the law that might throw your career plans out the window. So there are going to be quite a few, I would say, mid-career, early-stage folks coming out here trying to get into some of the stem cell work. And then the other thing that's probably going to happen, and I think it already is happening, is that other jurisdictions are going to respond. I think New Jersey, Massachusetts, I know Harvard has a very ambitious stem cell program.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin, England's a leader in this. Asia, Singapore, there are a lot of places where there's stem cell work going on besides California.
So people aren't just going to lay down and surrender, but it is a lot of money. Carl Hall, give us a sense of how this money is going to be applied. It's about $300 million a year that's to be doled out, largely through the University of California campus system, university system?
Well, no. They've created a new institute. It's a standalone institute. It's called the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Regenerative because, of course, stem cells, the hope is that these cells will be turned into anything that people need medically.
Yeah, that's right. And not only that, but all the biology involving embryonic development and so forth and disease processes, you know, how a disease arises in a cell. They might be able to study all that in these stem cells and get a handle on all kinds of pathologies that have not really yielded so far any other way. There's a number of options where this could be a big commercial factor. Maybe in drug development, they could use these stem cell colonies as sort of like little clinical trials to test a drug and maybe avoid having to go through a big expensive patient trial. So all those things could start happening, but the first year or maybe a couple of years, the grants are probably going to be fairly modest, and there's a ceiling of $350 million a year.
Okay.
And I think the facilities that they're going to have to build may be the focus, the initial focus, as well as, you know, setting up just the process. It's kind of unclear how long these grants are going to be in duration, whether they may be, you know, multi-year grants. I imagine there will probably be a mixture of multi-year large grants for principal investigators and people with established labs,
mm-hmm.
ambitious projects, and so forth. And there might be some smaller grants just to maybe try out a novel idea and see if it works and maybe give some junior people a shot at it that way.
So the first money going into a lot of infrastructure, what's the sense? How firm do Californians, firmly do they believe that all this money will pay off? There's been a lot done around the country, as you say. You mentioned Wisconsin. They've got a lot of money up, $750 million on the table being proposed. And even before that, researchers at the University of Wisconsin, they were first to discover how to isolate and grow human embryonic stem cells without the kind of California scale investment. Is it clear that money will buy the lead here?
No. There are quite a few people, particularly outside California, who are just aghast at this. They think it's maybe about 10 times too much money. There's a good chance you're going to see, good science. Well, I'm sure there's a risk when you have a program like this with the government involved. There's always a risk that there's not enough good science to justify that kind of money. And, we'll just have to see. I don't think anybody would bet the mortgage, the farm, on stem cells paying off.
$3 billion is a pretty big bet.
Yeah, it sure is. We all kind of looked at it as a sort of a blue state thing. And California went against Bush and went for stem cells. And I don't think too many people really looked into all the details.
Already a lot of clamor in California about potential conflicts of interest and how the money gets ladled out and where the ultimate benefit will go.
Yeah, and that's become, I think, even more interesting since the election. They've stumbled a couple of times already and had to cancel most of the agenda of their first meeting, the committee that's going to run this institute I'm talking about, and just to avoid complaints about the state's open meeting rules, which they more or less violated, I guess. But the process right now is starting to engender a fair bit of interest. People who opposed this during the election are now saying I told you so. But I think the smart money is betting that these folks are going to go out of their way to avoid handing their opponents any ammunition.
A lot of money, a lot of ammunition. Carl Hall, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Carl Hall with the San Francisco Chronicle. We're looking at California's stem cell gold rush. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about California's stem cell gold rush, $3 billion in state funding for new research, and the implications for the rest of the country. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you in the biotech business, in stem cell research? Is California's $3 billion investment turning your head? Has it got you moving to California? Does California's big bet on stem cell research help the rest of the country or hurt it? And is it an outrage that one big state is doing an end run on federal restrictions, or is it a godsend? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined now from San Francisco by Keith Yamamoto. He is Executive Vice Dean of the University of California San Francisco School of Medicine. He was a science advisor for Proposition 71, the California Stem Cell Research and Cures Initiative. Keith Yamamoto, thanks for being with us tonight.
Nice to be with you.
Also with us tonight, Wise Young, Professor and Chair of Cell Biology and Neuroscience at Rutgers University in Piscataway, New Jersey. He heads the Science Committee at the Stem Cell Institute of New Jersey. Wise Young, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Keith Yamamoto, first to you. How high is excitement running in California in the research community on the back of this $3 billion promise of public funds?
I think excitement is running very high. I think that the science community recognizes that this new area, you know, still trying to define itself as stem cell research, has enormous potential, both for discovery of fundamental information about the ways that cells and organisms work and what happens and goes wrong in disease, and the potential to understand them, diagnose them, and cure them. And I think that this confluence of the possibility of gaining new fundamental information and being able to apply it has the scientific community very excited.
You were involved in the effort to get this passed by the voters in November, and it did, 59% to 41% in California statewide balloting. What do you think was the most persuasive pitch to California voters? $3 billion is a lot of money. What persuaded them ultimately? Was it science, or was it the promise of an economic windfall at the end of the rainbow?
I think it was both. I think that the potential to actually attack diseases at their root causes captured people's imagination and raised people's hopes. And so this is something that the scientific community needs to be very careful of and be very cautious to be as open and honest and forthright about the potentials for these technologies to move forward on disease. But I think it is what really excited the voters. And I think there was also a certain feeling that the federal government had dropped the ball here and that it was important for this work to move forward. And if the largest state needed to stand up and make that move, that they would do so.
Wise Young, you've been up to your elbows in cell biology and stem cell research there in New Jersey. You've been quoted by the LA Times saying that California's move may create a temporary shortage of stem cell scientists elsewhere around the country, make it harder for institutions outside California to retain researchers. Do you see this move in California as a threat or a turbocharger? How do you look at it as a New Jersey biologist?
Well, I think that if the states do not, other states besides California do not respond to this, there will indeed be a flight of stem cell scientists from other states to California. I do want to point out in the earlier comments that there's one constituency that was not mentioned, and that is really the people with diseases. I think the major push and the major motivation behind Proposition 71 was really people like Robert Klein, whose son has diabetes. Mm-hmm. They want to see much more rapid progress in coming up with treatments for diseases such as diabetes.
Robert Klein, this is the real estate multimillionaire who backed the Proposition 71 and is now chairman of the Oversight Committee for its execution.
That's correct. So it's really the promise and the hope that drove the Proposition 71. And similarly, that same situation drove the effort here in New Jersey, where we passed about a year and a half ago a stem cell bill similar to California's, and New Jersey committed itself to forming to state funds to form a stem cell institute here.
Now, I don't know if I've got my numbers exactly right. As I recall, it's something like $9 or $10 million, not $3 billion, that New Jersey has applied. So where does that leave? How does it leave you feeling today? Do you feel made puny by California? Are you flicked out of the race by this, or
no.
Have you got your fork in here and you're going to stay in?
Well, the joke is that there's a sucking sound that's on the West Coast that we can hear.
But... Not Ross Perot's to Mexico, but the cell biologist to California.
Yes. But actually, the effort in New Jersey is different from that in California. The effort in New Jersey is a more centralized effort. It probably does not require as much funding as the California effort does. We are, of course, working with many California scientists developing different aspects of stem cell research, and we hope to work very closely with them. We do not want to duplicate the California effort. I think the effort here in New Jersey is really focused on translational research that with an emphasis on products. Over 50% of the pharmaceutical therapeutics industries have their headquarters or a significant part of their companies here in New Jersey.
So does that leave you feeling that maybe California citizens will put up all this money to do the basic research and you will harvest that basic research with applications out of New Jersey plants?
Well, I think California will benefit tremendously from the Proposition 71. Just if you just think about this just from the viewpoint of numbers, in New Jersey alone, there's about 180 biotech pharma companies with some kind of interest in stem cells. If each one of these companies spent $1 million on stem cell research, which is not very much for a company to spend, this would add up to nearly $200 million worth of investment in research in one state. Mm. So in California, if they were able to attract 20 companies, each of which spent $10 million in stem cell research, they would have had a huge return.
Mm-hmm. Almost matching funds. I mean, not exactly, but maybe over time. We're talking tonight about California's stem cell gold rush. What do you think? Is that giant sucking sound that Wise Young talks about the sound of your state's economic future going west? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Alex is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, probably has a claim to make from there. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And, good holidays to you and the guests.
Thanks, Alex. Same to you.
Certainly California has sweetened the pot with respect to stem cell research, but I do see three problems. First, California and others will definitely need to play catch-up with the University of Wisconsin, who is clearly the leader in this area.
And we see your governor there, Jim Doyle, just in the last few days saying we're going to stay in this game. We're in it big time. $750 million is not peanuts.
Not only Jim Doyle, but Tommy Thompson, who's mm-hmm. coming back to the state mm-hmm. here, is also a proponent of stem cell research. Number two, it will be very difficult for California and other places to completely separate stem cell facilities from their NIH-sponsored facilities. And that I think, is a problem that is not talked about and has been underrated.
And you're saying they'll have to because, of course, NIH operates under President Bush's restrictions.
Correct.
This new initiative will not. They've got to be separate.
And finally, a more practical issue. A researcher who is considering going to California will actually have to live in California. I mean, how much does a house in the Bay Area cost?
Alex, are you speaking to us from the state that I don't know if you're included in that 2-foot blanket of snow right now? I mean, there's advantages and disadvantages everywhere, right?
Right, but Madison is a very livable place.
It sure is. I can attest to that.
Everyone who comes here falls in love with it.
Yeah, I do.
And is very much less expensive than the Bay Area, than mm-hmm. Boston, mm-hmm. even in the Baltimore area around Johns Hopkins. I'll get off the phone. I'll listen on the radio. Thanks much.
Alex, thanks for calling. Keith Yamamoto, there's a challenge from Madison, Wisconsin, saying you can spend big bucks, but we've got the lead. You're not going to take it. We can't afford to live in your state anyway.
Well, we have great respect for Wisconsin. You know, there are two academic institutions that created stem cell lines that are presently on the president's NIH registry for stem cells. One is the University of Wisconsin, and the other is my institution, UCSF.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been in this field for a long time. Stem cells were first created and discovered, named at UCSF by Gail Martin, a researcher there in the 1980s. And we're very dedicated to this area. I think that the comment, though, underscores something that really raises an important point, and that is that it's not to anyone's interest for states to get involved in a competition over this work.
Well, easy for you to say. Your state just ponied up $3 billion. That's competition now, isn't it?
Well, it's true, and I think that the reason for all of that is that it should be the federal government that's supporting biomedical research across this country. It's a proven system. The NIH started this their peer review grant system in 1946. System that has worked magnificently. If you look at the list of Nobel laureates in physiology and medicine since that time, you would find that the great preponderance of them have been won by researchers with NIH research, with NIH funds.
And you're saying their procedures and peer review process is a proven track record. You don't need each state reinventing the wheel or trying to.
That's right. And what you heard from Carl Hall of the efforts of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine to create on a fast track policies that would pay attention to all of the potential conflicts and be fair-minded and rigorous about evaluating grant applications is really an effort to reinvent that system. So in many ways, I think even though I'm sitting here in California and at UCSF where there's great excitement about this research, I think it's unfortunate that the federal government is not the funding agency and that the citizens of California, the scientists in California, had to be the ones that that created this initiative and the voters voting for it, of course, to move forward. And I hope that, in a way, it and the success of it will stand to reawaken the federal government to its responsibilities.
Well, I hear exactly what you're saying. At the same time, it's easy to be magnanimous when you're sitting on $3 billion. Let's hear some more voices from around the country. Right now, James Willerson is joining us from Houston, Texas. He's a cardiologist. He's president of the University of Texas Health Science Center. James Willerson, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
So here I'm looking at a Houston Chronicle headline, December, Texas losing ground in stem cell research. Other states are sidestepping federal limits on what some call medicine's future. What's the sense in Houston? You're a huge medical center. Does California ace you out of the game, or how do you see it now, James Willerson?
Well, we're very respectful of both California and Wisconsin and also New Jersey and their efforts in stem cell work. But the Texas Medical Center in Houston is the largest in the world. It sees 5.5 million patient visits every year. There's no place in the world that has that number of patient visits. And many of the patients have cancer and heart and vascular disease. Like the other speakers, we've been involved in stem cell research for a long time, too, probably about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And we began by creating experimental heart attacks in animals, rodents and rabbits, pigs, others, using stem cells from several different sources, from fetal to adult.
Gosh, bless them all.
Mm-hmm. And became convinced that cells given in the right way could repair, at least partly, the experimentally created heart attack and do it safely. In the year 2000, from the Texas Heart Institute in Houston and the University of Texas,
mm-hmm.
we went to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and asked permission at the Hospital Procartico, which is a heart hospital, to begin to treat patients with severe heart failure with their own stem cells taken from their bone marrow.
Right.
So we take an aspirate of bone marrow, separate out mononuclear cells, some of which will be stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
We have a special catheter that we can re-inject these cells into the heart muscle itself at sites that are not scarred but are reversibly injured after earlier heart attack.
Why are you doing that in Brazil and not in Texas?
Well, will you give me 1 minute and I'll come back to
mm-hmm.
that? That's an important question. We were treating patients with very severe heart failure. I believe this is the first study in the world to treat patients with severe heart failure with their own bone marrow-derived stem cells injected directly into their heart with this catheter.
We get it. It's big.
2 months later, patients had better blood flow and
mm-hmm.
function. That's now sustained at a year. There are three German groups that have shown something similar in patients with recent heart attacks, but without heart failure.
James Willerson, we acknowledge you're doing incredible work, but the issue we're really trying to get to tonight is what the California move means. You're a big red state. This is embryonic stem cell research that they're talking about. So you may have ethics restrictions that they're not under. You're a state without state money, but you've got a tremendous background in research already. So do you feel, on balance, boosted or intimidated by the California move?
Well, we're not intimidated. And that's the reason for reviewing mm-hmm. this experience with you. But we're very hopeful that Texas, too, and not in a competitive way, I agree this should not be competitive, will support this kind of work and create a stem cell center or centers in Texas. I'm sure it won't be $3 billion, but I'm hoping it will be adequate to carry on this work.
And will it be embryonic stem cells, given your political coloring there?
Our first goal would be to try to see if placental-derived or cord blood cells, circulating stem cells, bone marrow-derived stem cells, and also stem cells that are present in fat tissue might be good enough to repair injured hearts and brains after heart attacks and strokes. At the same time, in animal models, we are using fetal cells, have been for a while,
mm-hmm.
approved cell lines, those approved by President Bush, and we want to compare that with the other stem cell lines. But we've really been very pleased with the efficacy of the human, of the adult, bone marrow-derived stem cells. I'm certain earlier lineage cells will have greater capability, but I think it's important that we and others establish just how good cells other than fetal cells might be.
Well, big ambitions and already a big track record. James Willison, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
James Willison, president of the University of Texas Health Science Center. Wise Young, as you listened there, there's clearly a lot of pride in what's already been accomplished and big ambitions, like California has big ambitions. Do you see states like Texas and your own as chipping out niches? In Houston, they've got the heart niche. Is California going to impinge on that, or do you see these as complementary ultimately?
Oh, I hope it is complementary. I do want to point out something that Keith Yamamoto had earlier pointed out, that really this whole movement of state funding of stem cell research is because Congress and the federal government dropped the ball on stem cells.
Isn't doing much.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just about embryonic. There's underfunding of adult stem cell work as well. This is the bizarre thing about this. Currently, according to NIH's own statistics, less than $300 million is being spent on all of stem cell research.
When California steps up at this scale, is it enough to keep the U.S. in the game or even put it in the forefront nationally, globally, or not?
I hope so. You know, Singapore spent $1 billion on setting up their stem cell effort over the last 3 years.
Singapore, a city-state.
Right. So you know, there's a lot of overseas competition, but I think the most important factor is that $300 million, or 1% of NIH, is not sufficient to study what most scientists regard as the most important problem in life sciences today.
Wise Young, Keith Yamamoto, please stand by. There's a lot more we want to learn. We're talking tonight about California's stem cell gold rush, $3 billion in state funding for new research, and the implications for the rest of the country. You can join us tonight. Is this a brilliant move or a risky bet by California? And can states without billions in public research support still compete? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about California's stem cell gold rush, $3 billion in state funding heading into new research in embryonic stem cells, all kinds of medical applications. What do you think? Will California now grab the best research minds in the nation? Is California's investment going to keep the U.S. in the global game on stem cell research? Or will it take a much greater federal role sooner or later? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What does this mean for the economic future of your state? I'm joined tonight by Keith Yamamoto. He's Executive Vice Dean of the University of California San Francisco School of Medicine. And by Wise Young, Professor and Chair of Cell Biology and Neuroscience at Rutgers University. He heads the Science Committee at the Stem Cell Institute of New Jersey. Right now, Robert is calling from New Bedford, Massachusetts. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
We all know, even though Senator Kerry was not elected as president, and we know he was in favor of the stem cells research, I would like to know, it seems like an obvious question, but I wonder if your guest has any predictions as far as what will happen in the with the lab stocks or stem cell stocks if this research really goes ahead full steam.
So you're looking to make some money in the stock market on this overall initiative. Let's pick that up. Robert, I want to turn to Chicago for an answer there. Mark Heason joins us. He's president of the National Venture Capital Association. Mark Heason, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
There's an individual American investor saying, is this a good place to put my investment? That's what venture capitalists weigh all the time. How big the opportunity here and how big a rock in the pond, Mark Heason, is California's move?
I think the rock in the pond is actually quite big and will echo out for quite a long time. As to the specific question, I would say that stem cell research is just that at this point. It's research. A lot of it is basic research, not applied research. Mm. And so we venture capitalists invest in applied research, and it's very long term. And so there have been some companies that are doing stem cell research that have gotten venture capital, but it is I think we're at the very tip of the iceberg of venture capitalists getting involved actively in funding stem cell companies, waiting for the researchers that have been talking thus far tonight to find wonderful things that we can then invest in and take to the public market.
But given that you're waiting for the basic research to be done so you can move in, invest in companies, and hopefully make a pile, venture capitalists must be absolutely giddy that California is intending, funding an effort to push the ball down the field so dramatically.
The venture capital community supported Proposition 71 in California very strongly. At the same rate, you have to remember this is long term. This $3 billion is going to be allocated out over 10 years. It is going to be basically sent to very basic types of research. The venture capital community is excited about this, but you won't see the venture capitalists getting actively involved for 5 to 7 years from now. And if you don't see the venture capital community getting involved 5 to 7 years from now, that's a real red flag to say, you know, maybe some of this research really isn't that good, or we don't believe it has a market potential to take us to the next level.
How do you see this industry being assessed right now? Put it in California terms, maybe, in comparison with computers and software, things that absolutely drove that economy, and in much of the rest of the country as well. Does stem cell research have the same capacity to ignite industry of that scale?
Well, I don't know if it's of that scale, but it certainly does. We recently did a study which demonstrates that in the biotech space, you were talking about very educated, high-level, highly paid individuals who are taking these jobs. Many states exactly want that type of person living in their state. And those people then, you know, want good educational and cultural facilities. They want a lot for their children, so it basically has a very major reverberating effect on the local economy to get these types of people into your state.
Keith Yamamoto, can you give us some sense? You must have done research to help promote passage of Proposition 71. What kind of payback, payoff, are you expecting, and the people who supported this initiative, expecting that the stem cell research might deliver California if it works out as you hope?
I think it's pretty early to tell. I would agree that this is a very early stage. I think the drafters of Prop 71 calculated that if just the California health care costs could be reduced by as little as 1 or 2%, by the research that would go on during these 10 years, then the initiative would actually pay for itself.
In other words, if it produced cures for, you name it, diabetes or other ailments, that would figure right back as a savings.
Well, certainly a cure for diabetes would more than pay for it, not only economically, of course, but in terms of just the well-being of our citizens. Mm-hmm. So I think the potential is very great there. It is early stage, and I think that the way that $300 million per year could be expended wisely in the state of California is to recognize that the work is early stage, that there needs to be a great breadth of research that's done, whether it's on adult or embryonic stem cells, whether it's on early studies in the ways that embryos develop and that cells choose to either differentiate or to continue proliferating. All of these are sort of fundamental rules that need to be understood about the way the cells work, and for the work to move forward in a rational way toward being able to treat and diagnose cure diseases. We're going to need to understand that kind of information across a broad front.
And what about where the payoff lands? I already see the controversy in the California newspapers, even in national publications, some saying too much of the benefit will ultimately go to the kind of venture capital firms that Mark Heeson represents. That's going to be a huge public investment with the profits ending up in private pockets. Are you worried about that? What's your reply to that?
Well,
Mark Heeson in Chicago?
I think that it's, the reality is that venture capitalists will put money into biotechnology companies. We have basically funded the entire biotechnology industry as it exists today. Virtually every company that is out there that is biotech related has been venture financed. Will we see a payoff on some of those? Absolutely. But if we are seeing a payoff on those, then the general public is seeing a huge payoff on them. And at the same rate, you have to remember who our investors are who give us the money, and those are state pension funds, their colleges and endowments. All of these entities win when the venture capital community wins. So it's not just, one venture capitalist who's suddenly making a lot of money.
Though they would and will.
People that are winning, not only the people who are being cured of an affliction, but also financially.
Keith Yamamoto, how about that question? I'm reading here in Business Week, Mitch Kapoor, a software entrepreneur that Bostonians and many around the country will know well. He says it's kind of a loaded dice. If it doesn't work, the VC don't lose anything. The state pays for it. He says, but if it does work, they get all these fundable companies. And this is an entrepreneur saying that it's too generous to the private sector ultimately. How do you respond?
I think that what we really need to keep in mind is that if this money is spent wisely, that is to say, if the policies that the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine produces do at least mirror the wisdom that we've seen within National Institutes of Health, then we know that we're going to win in one way, and that way is that we will gain fundamental information about biological processes, physiological processes that will move health research ahead, as I said, across a broad front. Whether that will lead to stem cells being able to be used to cure diseases, sure, we hope so. And I think there's every potential for that to happen. But what we know will happen is that these funds and the research that comes from the funds will generate important information and that will be very useful for the health of our citizens.
Listeners, what do you think? Does California's big bet here on stem cell research help the rest of the country or hurt it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Wise Young, I want to come back to this issue of federal policy with you. This is an enormous end run on the policy that President Bush promulgated. Let's look at it in ethical terms for a moment. Where does this leave the country? We've got very sharp restrictions at the federal level, but now a wide open playing field with much more funding in California. Does it make kind of a mockery of the federal restrictions? Is this an absurd situation?
Oh, absolutely not. I think NIH is absolutely the bedrock of science. And I think, as Keith Yamamoto pointed out, our hope is that NIH will take up the cudgel once more, because $300 million is really a small part of what NIH is funding. For example, NIH current budget is close to $30 billion per year.
But Americans voted on November 2nd for a candidate who opposes moving these restrictions. I mean, how can NIH step up and be a player when these restrictions are there? And I'm not saying does it make a mockery of their procedures and their potential, but does it make a mockery of the restrictions when such a huge state is putting so much money into unfettered research?
Well, it really isn't that very much. It's $300 million per year, which is actually, $3 billion sounds like a lot, but $300 million per year is not all that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important the one party that has not been mentioned and hasn't been pushed forward enough here are the people who are suffering from the diseases. They are the driving force behind this. They have been hearing about stem cells for the last, 7, 8, 9, 10
right.
years.
But where's the medicine?
Yeah, where's the medicine? Where is it coming? And they are seeing that the federal government is dragging its feet. And so they're pushing for the alternative funding paths. And they have now done it in California. They've done it in New Jersey. When the stem cell bill in New Jersey passed, every advocacy group joined together for the first time in memory to push for this. And so it is really the hope and the promise of stem cells for the people and people who are suffering from diseases like ALS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, who are pushing for this. And these are the people who want to see the fruits of the research. And in the long run, I don't think many of them care whether or not this goes to venture capitalists or to pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. They want the therapies.
They're waiting. Kim is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Kim. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that it's my impression that the California initiative is a very good thing, mainly because I think that some of the most innovative research is done by young scientists with a fresh perspective, like James Thompson, and they have a lot of energy and great things can get done.
So you're saying you don't care where the support comes from, let's just see support for it?
The second part of what I wanted to mm-hmm. say is that I think that in private enterprise and private biotechnology companies, there's much more, I think there's much more chance of this research coming to fruition, because I think the federal granting system does not favor young scientists with fresh perspectives. And I think that the university research environment often has a much more stolid, stagnant framework
mm-hmm.
about
it. So you want to get the funds into the hands of the best and the brightest and the young and set them loose on it. Kim, thanks very much for your call. Mark Eason, I want to come to you because you represent people who would like to be investing in this, but I still wonder about the ethical issue. President Bush drew a very clear line in the sand. He limited the number of embryonic stem cell lines available. The country reelected him on November 2nd. The map of the country is primarily red or, you know, majority red. And that the ethical decision that all that suggests is that the majority of Americans aren't prepared to go forward with embryonic stem cell research. So where do we end up with California pushing ahead, the federal position still right at that line in the sand?
Well, I think that you really have to look at the California initiative and see the overwhelming support for that initiative, even though there were a lot more votes for that initiative than went for the for either John Kerry or George Bush.
Yep.
So. People were splitting their votes, and I think that shows that there are a lot of people, you know, Nancy Reagan at the forefront of that, saying, I might be voting for President Bush, but I'm also supporting stem cell research. So I wouldn't take simply the presidential election and say that if you're a red state, you believe one thing, and if you're a blue state, you believe another. I think that venture capitalists look at this and say, we are looking at this from a purely scientific vantage point, and stem cells are a very important part of this. If we as the United States don't step to the mat on this, there are other countries that are going to do so, and we as venture capitalists follow the brains. If we want to stake and continue to fund U.S. biotechnology companies, they have to be at the forefront of research.
Ooh, there's a threat. You're saying if the brains are abroad, the money will be abroad too.
Absolutely. That's what we do.
Well, there it is. Pretty stark, but a great helping of insight tonight here. Mark Eason at the National Venture Capital Association in Chicago, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Wise Young at Rutgers University, heading the Science Committee at the Stem Cell Institute of New Jersey, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And in San Francisco, Keith Yamamoto, Executive Vice Dean of the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, thanks for sharing your insights.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.